May it please the Court, I'm Gary Rowe for the defendants, and if I may, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, watch the clock. I'll try to help you as well.
I will do so. We submit that this case does not belong in federal court under principles of equity, comity, and federalism. The district court in this case issued a mandatory injunction as an overlay on an ongoing state court public nuisance injunction when the state court system has proven itself perfectly capable of vindicating constitutional values. What the plaintiff should have done instead is gone to state court and requested a modification or perhaps a limiting construction of the provision of the injunction to which they objected. Instead, they chose to seek what the U.S. Supreme Court in Huffman versus Pursue has called a, quote, disruptive and offensive federal injunction. Disruptive and offensive because it reflects negatively on the state's ability to enforce constitutional principles. If allowed to stand, the district court's injunction creates the risk of routine collateral attacks on state court public nuisance injunctions and gang injunctions.
May I ask you, just to begin, does the city of Los Angeles agree that the curfew provisions, and I'll call the contested provisions curfew just by way of shorthand, do you agree that these provisions are unconstitutional?
No, Your Honor, we are not taking a position on the constitutionality of those provisions at this time. We don't care to contest it in this litigation.
Well, this is like devil talk to me. So let's just go back to basics. Did the California Court of Appeal declare that these curfew provisions are unconstitutional?
In the Colonial Chiquez case, yes, the California Court of Appeal declared them unconstitutional. However, that was not in any of these 26 cases that were before the district court.
Was the same language in there that was declared unconstitutional in the 26, among the 26 injunctions at issue here?
It was the same language in all except, but I believe
so. Okay, so let me just get it straight. California Court of Appeals says this is unconstitutional, correct?
And you agree? Yes.
And you don't disagree with that, I hope.
The Supreme Court didn't grant review, and we...
So you're kind of stuck with it.
Yes, we are.
Okay. And under the California system, that flows down to the all superior courts, correct?
That is correct.
So therefore, the language that is in the current injunction is unconstitutional, correct?
No, Your Honor.
Not
exactly.
See, this is where I'm having trouble, like where you guys are just weaseling around. Well, it's not exactly unconstitutional, and I don't want to admit it, but I'm not going to enforce it.
I understand, Your Honor. Let me see if I can put it as
precisely
as possible.
Yes, see if you can dig yourself out of this hole.
Okay.
Okay.
So the Colonial Chiquez case rendered the injunctions in these cases voidable, but not void. In other words, there is a Court of Appeal decision on point, and all superior courts in the state of California under California procedure are required to follow that decision. However, courts of appeal are not required to. The procedure, therefore, for coming in and getting the injunction changed is not to run to federal court citing Colonial Chiquez. Rather, it's to go into the state court that issued the injunction and saying, Your Honor, we have a slam dunk case for modification. There's a Court of Appeal decision here. You are obliged to follow it. And that's not what happened here. And that's the gist of our argument.
Are you enforcing any of the curfew provisions?
No, we have a policy of not enforcing the curfew provision, Your Honor.
Have you had mediation in this case?
We have.
I mean, to me, it's incomprehensible that you've got a state court of appeals case that says it's unconstitutional. You say you're not going to enforce it, and all they're saying is, why don't you just tell people? It's not like a big thing. You have easy access to last known residence addresses of the recipients of these orders, correct?
We have some access. Some people are difficult to find.
Sure, but the ones that you have, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could make a good faith effort to send that notice out, right?
Yes.
But you're not going to do that voluntarily?
Well, we've been compelled to by the district court, so we have complied with the preliminary injunction in the meantime. However, we believe that principles of equity, comity, and federalism are so important that they do not permit a district court to require us to do that, that the idea of a federal court interfering with a state court injunction, when the problem can be fixed so easily in state court. All it takes is...
Have you given notice already to the parties required by the district court?
We have begun the process of giving notice, yes.
You haven't completed that process.
We believe we have an ongoing obligation to continue to look for people because, as I mentioned, it's difficult to find everyone.
But you've made a good faith effort of those whose addresses are available to you to already send out the notice, is that right?
That's correct.
And I take it you wouldn't retract that notice even if you won this case?
I don't see how we could go to the postal system and pull it out.
Just asking, you wouldn't retract your policy of non-enforcing, correct?
We have a policy now of non-enforcement. It's possible that we could go to the Court of Appeal in another case and ask the Court of Appeal to disagree with Colonial Chicas because that's the way the California system works. Courts of Appeal are not bound by other courts of appeal. And the Supreme Court denied review in Colonial Chicas, so we don't have a definitive California Supreme Court adjudication that's binding on all courts of appeal at this point.
Do you have any pending cases in which you have challenged, in which that language is under challenge now in the Court of Appeal?
No, we don't.
Another Court of Appeal?
No, we do not.
Okay.
Counsel, Judge Gould, if I could ask you a question, please.
Yes, Your Honor.
So if you have the right in other gang injunction cases to take the issue up to a court of appeals and ask that court of appeals to modify to change the law or to hold something different than what the Chiquita's case said. If you can do that, does the injunction here interfere with your ability to do that?
Yes, it does, Your Honor, because the injunction that the district court enters required us to give notice and required us to note that the curfew provision is unconstitutional. The district court, in other words, ruled the curfew provision unconstitutional, and therefore we would be bound by that decision. It would be required for us to honor that decision regardless of the court.
Why does it prevent you from going to another California Court of Appeal under a policy of non-acquiescence and telling them that you disagree with Colonial Chicas and that you want to challenge it?
It doesn't prevent us from doing that as an abstract point of law, but we would still be required under the district court's order to issue the notice and to accept its holding that the curfew provision is unconstitutional.
You could have gone and challenged and brought a collateral attack on Colonial Chicas at almost any time since that decision was issued.
Yes, Your Honor, but it's not our burden. The burden lies...
That decision was issued 6 years ago.
Correct, 2007.
Okay, so I'm having a hard time understanding how this is interfering with your ability to go and challenge a decision that you haven't challenged in 6 years.
Your Honor, the issue isn't about our ability or willingness to challenge a particular Court of Appeal decision. The question is whether the district court can use a California Court of Appeal decision to interfere with ongoing state proceedings.
But how is it? The question is, how does it interfere? If all it is saying is that you should give notice,
mm-hmm.
right? You should give notice that you're not going to enforce this anymore, right?
Yes.
How does that interfere with any proceeding?
It interferes with ongoing gang nuisance proceedings, right? The gang injunctive proceedings.
What ongoing proceedings? Which court?
26 superior courts that are administering.
And these are ongoing?
These are ongoing. A nuisance proceeding is an ongoing proceeding under California law.
Are you having hearings before state judges?
No, but one has the ability to go into court.
It's ongoing only because you have an injunction that's in place.
That's right. An injunctive proceeding is, according to the California Supreme Court.
But there are currently no hearings, and you don't have the intention of having any hearings.
We will have hearings if defendants go into court and ask for a modification.
Right. But there aren't. Well, that's true of any injunction in the sense that potentially it could be modified.
That's precisely the point.
But But there's no ongoing proceedings, correct?
No, Your Honor.
And what the plaintiffs ask for here is they do not ask to upend those gang proceedings in any way, right? They are not really asking, in effect, to challenge those court orders.
No, Your Honor. They are challenging the curfew provision in those court orders.
Well, if they really were challenging the court orders, why didn't you raise Rooker-Feldman?
We didn't raise Rooker-Feldman because under Lance v. Davis, the U.S. Supreme Court's 2006 case, it only applies to parties. There's no privity doctrine.
Okay, that's why I'm starting there. So Rooker-Feldman is out because these individuals who are in this now certified class were not parties to these 26 cases, correct?
Yes, that's right. They were not named.
They were not named. So then
all of them weren't named.
Right. So then no Rooker-Feldman. So then you go to the next question, okay, well, how about Younger? How then are these individuals who are not named as parties in these lawsuits, how is they're going to federal court going to interfere with the state court?
In two ways, Your Honor. First, three circuit courts, the 6th, the 7th, and the 11th, have held that non-parties in nuisance injunction proceedings are bound, are required to go to state court, that Younger or Younger-like abstention applies. And second, in our case, the relationship between the gang members served with the injunctions and the named parties is closer than it was in those cases. The interests of the people served but not named are intertwined with the interests of the members who were served and the gangs who were named in the injunction cases themselves. This court in the Green case set up as polar cases, Hicks versus Miranda on the one hand and Duran versus Salem Inn on the other hand. And we submit that this case is much more like Hicks versus Miranda, which involved an employer-employee relationship. And interestingly, at the end of that section of Hicks, Justice White, writing for the court, cited Chief Justice Berger's opinion in L.E. versus Medrando, which held that labor unions and their members are intertwined for purposes of Younger. That was a concurring opinion, but Justice White, for the majority in Hicks, cited that case.
What about the people who aren't gang members?
If they're not gang members, then they can petition the court to get out. They can file a paper with the city attorney.
Why do they have to do that? In other words, if I'm not a gang member, presumably I shouldn't be covered by one of these 26 orders, right?
Yes, that's correct.
But if you serve me with that, why can't I go to federal court and say, look, I'm not only was I not a party, but it says you have to be a gang member. I'm not a gang member.
Let me answer your question and then save the rest of the time for rebuttal. The answer to that would be there's a perfectly appropriate process in state court by which you can opt out, so the need for federal intervention is not necessary because of the adequacy.
I'll stop you there because that's, you know, this is a very tricky case, I think, and you would probably agree, everyone,
agree.
By their briefing. It's not that you're saying, well, you don't need to be in federal court, and I agree with you. One wouldn't need to be in federal court. You could go. So let's just say that you're totally correct. You could go to state court. There's not a barrier to going to state court. But that doesn't answer whether you could be in federal court. So since there's no exhaustion requirement, it's possible to have parallel proceedings as long as they're not interfering. So could you just address the second point of, sure, you can go to state court, but why can't you also be in federal court at your option?
Parallel proceedings, Your Honor, are, of course, ordinarily allowed, except when there is an ongoing state proceeding, which there is here, and the federal action would interfere with that or would make state court, would be disruptive to the state court process. Administering a gang injunction is very complicated, as in the Hoover case, the McKesson case, the Gottfried case. It would be mischievous to allow parallel proceedings, given the state's strong interest, first, in abating public nuisances. That's the interest here. And second, in enforcing its orders and its injunctions, as in the Pennzoil case, the O'Shea case, and the Juitas case, which governs contempt. There is such a strong state interest in that, that allowing people to go into state court when they want to say, hey, I'm not covered by this, that's where the interference lies. I see I have 15 seconds left.
Well, we're going to give you some extra time when the time comes.
Okay. There are no more questions right now. I'll sit down.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Ann Richardson on behalf of the plaintiffs' appellees. The reason that abstention does not apply in this case is that for 4.5 years following the decision in Colonia Chicas that held that these curfew provisions were unconstitutional, the City of Los Angeles continued to serve, arrest, and prosecute people for those curfew provisions that it knew to be unconstitutional. There is no case that the appellants have cited that is even remotely close for multiple reasons. First of all, the standard in the Ninth Circuit for Younger abstention is whether the action would enjoin or have the practical effect of enjoining a pending state court proceeding. And as Your Honors have pointed out, there's no real pending hearing, there's no trial. There isn't really a pending proceeding other than this ongoing gang injunction. But this action will not enjoin that action in any way. It does not interfere with it. It is not an insult to it. Unlike the case in the three circuit case decisions that are cited by the appellants, those are all extremely different because there the federal court was being asked to issue a sort of advisory type opinion to the state court about how an injunction should be applied. And also because in those cases, there was no state court decision that had already ruled these provisions unconstitutional. And in their brief, appellant's own opening brief, they admit that Colonia Chicas did hold unconstitutionally vague the gang injunction curfew provisions that are at issue in this federal case. That's on page 40 of their opening brief. So I do think it's a little disingenuous for the appellants to say, well, we might still challenge it. They've already agreed. They've never challenged it in the past. They filed their opposition to our motion for preliminary injunction. They finally came out with a policy to their police officers that said, don't arrest people. By the way, we still don't know whether or not they're continuing to serve these injunctions. But in this extremely unusual situation, which it is a little hard to believe, it was hard for us to believe, that they didn't just agree, you're right, these provisions are unconstitutional, let's do something about it, let's change it. It's in this very unusual circumstance.
Of course, you could have easily gone to state court and gotten a declaratory judgment, correct?
We could have gone to 22 different state courts with 26 different gang injunctions, but that's not the standard in the Ninth Circuit and in the Supreme Court. In the case of New Orleans Public Service, NOPSI frequently referred to, the court very clearly said there is no doctrine that the availability or even the pendency of state judicial proceedings excludes the federal courts. They also said, we do not remotely suggest that every pending proceeding between a state and a federal plaintiff justifies abstention. There are ongoing state and federal proceedings all the time. This court in Green said, the fact that there was a state proceeding where the plaintiffs could have raised their claims in a very similar proceeding did not mean they were required to. And part of the reasoning for that was this exhaustion requirement that Your Honor mentioned. There is no requirement that you canvass the state law courts to see whether there is a place you can bring your claim. You are permitted to do so in federal court so long as the court has jurisdiction.
Counsel, I certainly agree. You're not absolutely required to go to state court first, but there are doctrines about comity and about federalism. And so, you know, why is it not the case that to let the federal court by injunction basically superintend or monitor the state court gang injunction proceedings offends principles of comity?
It's a very important point, Your Honor. We are not asking to monitor the state court proceedings in any way. In this case, the defendant has already decided they're not going to enforce these provisions. Colonia Chicas, if anything, modified the state court injunctions. It was the state court opinion in Colonia Chicas that modified them, and all we're trying to do is ask the court, ask the city to let people know that they are no longer going to enforce these provisions, which they've already said they're not going to do. So we agree, if there was any way that this was enjoining the state court proceeding, was interfering, bringing it to a halt, interrupting it, say, in the middle of a trial, or while there was an appeal that was pending to the state court, those are the circumstances where courts have found abstention to be appropriate, because there is an interference, there's an insult. But here there's no insult. We just want to enforce the law that's already been articulated by the state courts. So we really are not doing anything to monitor or insult the state court proceedings whatsoever.
That brings me to my question. I keep going back to your complaint and then looking at the injunction. Could you summarize for me what your claim is and what relief you're seeking?
As it relates to the preliminary injunction or the entire case?
Both.
We are seeking both a preliminary injunction and statutory penalties in way of damages on behalf of all persons served with these injunctions. We did also pursue a subclass of persons that were arrested, but the court did not certify that class. So at this point, we are seeking statutory damages and preliminary injunction based on due process, as well as the California Constitution and Civil Code 52.1.
But what relief do you want besides giving notice on your injunction? Is there any other injunctive relief?
As far as a permanent injunction, Your Honor, there may be requirements for training. There might be a requirement to ensure that the city does, in fact, continue to enforce and uphold the policy that it said it's currently enforcing. We're in the process of doing discovery, Your Honor, so I can't yet speak as to whether there might be other additional aspects to a permanent injunction.
But in your preliminary injunction, do you have, in effect, a federal court declaring that the state court orders are invalid or unconstitutional?
Absolutely not. I mean, what we are doing is simply adopting and trying to enforce a state court decision. Colonia Chicas is the law as articulated by the state courts. That's a distinction that from all the other cases cited by the appellants. We are not asking to enjoin or interpret the law in any way that has not already been ruled to be law by the state courts.
Right, counsel, but it seems to me what you are doing is you're asking the federal court to enforce the state court's ruling with regard to the unconstitutionality of those provisions.
Well, there's an important distinction, Your Honor, between an injunction and the state court, the city's policy of enforcing it. And at all times here, we have been trying to focus on the city and what it's doing in the wake of Colonia Chicas. And their own briefs, they argued that Colonia Chicas modifies the injunction by itself, just by being the law of the land. And somehow our plaintiffs were supposed to know and be aware that they were no longer supposed to abide by that curfew provision. So they've already argued, if you will, that Colonia Chicas and the injunctions have already been modified by the state court decision. And all we're doing is asking that the city stop. We would never have filed the suit. Maybe we could have filed the suit, but we wouldn't have filed the suit if the city hadn't continued to serve. They considered additional options. They considered going in for modifications or sending out notices. They decided not to. And that's in the record at SER 9 and 10.
I think I understand that. But now, again, you're not required to do this. But if you could get all this relief in state court, then where does that leave us in evaluating whether there's irreparable injury that would support injunction. In other words, under the winter factors, one of the factors is that the plaintiffs would be irreparably injured absent injunction. And how are they irreparably injured if they could march into state court and get this relief?
Well, first of all, there are 22 different actions. There would have to be plaintiffs from each of the 22 injunctions that would go into state court and do that. Second of all, what we're really doing is we're trying to make sure that the city stop enforcing. The city should have stopped enforcing this law after Colonia Chicas. So we're not really focusing so much on the pure language of the injunction. We're focusing on the fact that the city continued to go in, serve people, arrest people, make people think that they were still subject to these injunctions and had to stay inside. That the city might do that even if we had gone in to the court and asked for modifications to the injunctions. We don't know that. So we are focusing on the conduct of the city, not the precise language of the injunction, if you will. Did I answer your question? Okay.
I think you did.
Okay. So shall I move on to the due process portion, or the court interested in hearing
sure.
regarding the due process? I think it's important to note that, you know, once Colonia Chicas came down, if not before, it was clear that due process had been violated. And so whether or not people were served with the injunction before Colonia Chicas came down or afterwards, once it came down, their rights were violated, and they were entitled to notice that these provisions would no longer be enforced.
What area of law other than immigration law have the courts said that simply because your rights are being violated, you're entitled to notice?
Certainly with respect to criminal law, certainly with respect to, I'm trying to remember if some of the injunctions relating to civil rights matters where there's been a requirement that the city notify people. It requires a situation.
You can't point to anything in a civil context, I take it. I mean, these are civil injunctions, correct?
That's true.
And basically we're saying, okay, your rights have been violated, and the remedy is a mandatory injunction with a notice. And I'm trying to find what's the legal predicate for such.
Yeah, it's really a quasi-criminal proceeding in some ways. These gang injunctions, they potentially put people at risk of being prosecuted. So I think that the immigration and criminal context is very relevant to that. When someone has had their rights chilled and they're being warned that they're subject to prosecution if they go outside or, you know, the other aspects of the injunction, then they're entitled to notice that that portion will not be enforced. So it's because they're subject to prosecution and being chilled, and the Colonia Chicas decision itself, which said that this was a violation of due process rights because it was unconstitutionally vague. The cases cited by the appellants McCullough and other cases regarding sentencing are completely distinguishable because in those cases, even though the INS gave an inaccurate form, the statute that was out there said that had the proper standard in it. So there was due process provided because they had access to the statute. Here, they only have the injunction, the written form of the injunction. There's no other place they can look to find out what the law is, and that's why.
Let me ask a more practical question. You're in this lawsuit in federal court. You're only here in the Court of Appeals because an injunction has been entered, so you're in an interlocutory appeal in the middle of your case. They've said, well, we actually have given the notices. We've complied. And we're continuing to comply to the extent we can find additional people. Recognizing, of course, plaintiffs always say, but we don't know that if we say it's moot or we agree with you, we don't know if you'll quit doing it. But the fact of the matter is, isn't it essentially for purposes of the interlocutory appeal, isn't it essentially moot? And if there was a problem, you could then go back to the district court?
You mean this appeal is
just
moot?
Yeah, well, on the preliminary injunction. And you'd be where you'd want to be, and they are where they are.
Right.
Although they don't want to be in federal court, they are in federal court.
In preparing for this argument, we had the same thought, Your Honor. This may well be moot. We're in the process of ascertaining whether or not all of the acts of the preliminary injunction have been completed. Mm-hmm. Just with respect to this appeal.
Yeah. That's why I'm asking, it's just this interlocutory appeal that we're looking at now.
Correct. And they never did seek a stay of the injunction.
No, they complied with
it. That's right. I think that may very well be the case, Your Honor.
And if that's the case, your position would be that at this stage this appeal is moot, and then you go about your way?
Proceed with the remainder of the case, Your Honor. Correct. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you put 2 minutes back, please? So if you don't mind to pick up where we left off and comment on this mootness issue, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, Your Honor. First of all, we think the case is not moot because we have an ongoing obligation to give notice. We are continuing to look for people, and therefore there's more to be done to comply with the injunction. And second, there's a case.
And your ongoing obligation consists of what?
We haven't been able to find everyone yet, so we're continuing.
And you have a discrete list of names?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
You have a discrete list of names that you have to advise under the PI?
We don't have a discrete list of names. We have to find everyone according to the preliminary injunction and who's subject to the gang injunction. In other words, everyone served with it.
Okay, but do you know who you served?
We know many of the people we've served, yes, but we don't know where they are.
Okay, no, but you didn't answer my question. Do you have a list of the people you served?
I believe we do.
Okay, but that's a discrete list.
Okay.
All right?
Yes.
Now, if the PI requires you to go back and reserve those people with a different form of notice saying we're not going to enforce these provisions of the gang injunction, then you have a discrete list of people that you have to serve.
Yes, but we haven't found everyone, so we have a continuing obligation to locate those people, to provide them with the notice that the district court asked for.
So you... let's just say there's 1,000 people for purposes of talking. There's a discrete list, as Judge Bybee says, of the ones for whom you had addresses or contact information. That notice has been sent, correct?
Yes.
And then there's some subset of these people for whom you don't have...
People who have moved,
yeah,
people who...
don't have information or who haven't.
People who are in custody, were in custody, no longer are...
Right, so you're trying to track them down to give notice.
That's correct, and that's a continuing obligation as long as the injunction.
What percentage of the total list is in that category?
I don't have an answer to that question, Your Honor. I don't know the number.
Big or small?
I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
I couldn't tell you. I see that I have...
No, we're going to give you time to come back, but I mean, as a practical matter, you're here on this... All of you are here in a preliminary injunction with some, pretty serious legal questions, and yet the essence of what they want, which was notice at this time, the city has agreed to do.
Your Honor.
It really counsels for not involving the Court of Appeals at this time.
It seems, Your Honor, like a very small matter, and... Indeed, it is in the sense to which Your Honor is referring. However, what's really at stake here is the insult to the state court, the idea that the district court can't trust them to police constitutional values, as the court proved it's capable of doing in Colonial Chicas, the idea that younger abstention should govern this entire case, and that it's not optional. It's not something you do in some circumstances when there's a big matter at stake and you skip in other circumstances.
Counsel, this might be very different if you'd gone back, if you'd gone back into state court and said, okay, we want to modify this, or we're going to challenge it. Let's just get it all clear.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you went back and voluntarily modified the gang injunctions, you might have a much stronger argument that the people who are subject to the injunctions have an obligation to be aware of what the law is. But you haven't put that in. You haven't put that in place. The district court now has issued an order saying, "Well, you've got to at least correct that because there's a possibility of misunderstanding here."
Your Honor, with all respect, I think it's actually the converse. I think it's the plaintiffs who have an obligation to go into court based on Colonial Chicas and have a change. Imagine, if you will, that a new rule of criminal procedure comes down after a defendant is convicted. There's no obligation of the government to give notice that there's a new rule that you could invoke in your habeas petition or in your appeal. Here, plaintiffs have the raw materials, Colonial Chicas, to make a very easy motion for modification.
I guess the other way to look at it, and there's no doubt they could go into state court. We all agree on that. The question is, can they come here too? But in effect, with Colonial Chicas being the governing law to date, with there's no other pending challenge, no Supreme Court review pending, that basically becomes the law of California, right? That this language is unconstitutional. That's tantamount to saying that's the law of California, right?
The law binding on all superior courts would be the precise way to put it.
Right. But it's binding on you too, isn't it? I mean, that's where I'm having trouble. It's like you're saying, well, the city, we're not really there. It's really the superior court that's bound. Well, they're bound, but when there's a Supreme Court case that sets out the law, you don't say, well, that's really just binding on the superior court. You know, the L.A. County attorney says, and I'm going to comply with that too. Let's just say it's on some other issue. So that seems to me by kind of splitting hairs.
Your Honor, I don't think it actually is, in that in my hypothetical, if a new decision of this court or the Supreme Court comes down, the prosecutor doesn't have an obligation to vacate a conviction if it was based on, say, a search that's no longer a valid search under this court's or the Supreme Court's rule of law. The defendant has an obligation to move to vacate the conviction or to make an appeal. And that's the same situation.
But
is
it the same situation where we're talking about a policy and practice of the law enforcement? And if now that policy and practice has been determined to be unconstitutional, how do you challenge that? It's the same, whether it was in earlier civil rights cases or now, you can challenge it by a 1983 action. So what I'm having some trouble with is you're standing here and saying, well, it's binding on the superior courts, but it's really not binding on us because we can go out. I mean, why don't you go out and, why have you agreed to give notice? Why did you decide not to enforce it? Because it was unconstitutional, right?
We decided as a matter of policy it wasn't very valuable to us as a prosecutorial tool and it wasn't worth fighting.
Didn't have anything to do with the fact that the California Court of Appeal declared it unconstitutional?
Certainly, in that it's not worth the fight. If in the damages phase of this case, we might well take a different position and disagree with Colonial Chicas. That is open to us. We don't think it's worth, as a prosecutorial tool, very much, so we don't want to make a big deal out of preserving that provision of the injunction. If plaintiffs had gone to state court, as I said, they would have a very easy modification, and under cases like the Seventh Circuit, the Sixth Circuit, the Eleventh Circuit, Younger abstention governs here, and the ordinary principle, which Your Honor cites, that you can go to federal court under Section 1983, simply doesn't apply because Younger requires, in cases where there's a pending proceeding, a super irreparable injury, if you will. The language in Younger is irreparable injury itself is insufficient unless the danger is both great and immediate. And the danger can't be when there is an ongoing state injunctive proceeding, and in California, injunctive proceedings like this one are ongoing precisely because of the ease by which one can modify the injunction.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you to both counsel also for the very excellent briefing. The case just argued, Rodriguez versus Los Angeles, is submitted.